But welcome to this edition of Northern Lights, the podcast from Business Crack, brought to you by Barnum Media, shining a light on businesses across Cumbria. I'm Nigel Thompson. Coming up, we'll bring your reaction to the Chancellor's spring statement. We'll hear why Barrow is now gearing up for a royal visit later this year. We'll meet the craftsman firmly based in Cumberland, who's been recognised for his trade. And we're hearing about a distinctly Cumbrian twist to a well-known drink created for sustainable reasons. Now, we'll also be looking ahead to what's coming up business-wise across Cumbria and further afield over the coming weeks. And I'm pleased to say I'm joined on this edition by Diane Richardson, who's the Chief Executive of Britain's Energy Coast Business Cluster. Diane, thanks for joining us. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you, Nigel. And thank you for inviting me along. Really looking forward to this podcast.
All right, it's good to see you. And thanks very much for joining us. A busy time, I'm sure, for you and your colleagues across Cumbria and across, obviously, this interesting time of life we find ourselves in at the moment. We're talking just after the spring statement. We've been gathering reaction for Business Crack over the past few days, really, about what people think about it from all different sectors. What's your take, then, on what Rachel Reeves had to say, or perhaps what she didn't say?
Well, to be honest, there weren't any surprises, were there? So, as you say, there's a lot of reaction out there. There's a lot of people picking up on different bits of the spring statement. So I'll concentrate on two things and then give you some of my kind of overall thoughts. First was the planning reforms and the capital investment. So the hope is that these will release some big capital projects, and finding the right balance for regulation is something that helps create that stable environment for business that's so important. These should help drive some growth into the economy, and combined are things that the business sector has been crying out for. I think for me, the question is not just how much government spend, but how they spend it. So they have some really strong levers in procurement that they can use if they take an outcomes-based approach to it and really build those outcomes into the process of procurement. That can make a really big difference in what is achieved through all of that. I think along with the new Procurement Act that came in recently, that's a really important piece for me. It's not just about the money, it's about how you spend it. It was really lovely, speaking of funding, to hear Barrow get a mention, but it's important to note that this wasn't new funding. So governments of all colours seem to like to announce the funding time and time again. So it was the same funding. But I do have a bit of a concern around the focus so much on defence without the backing up of energy security. So we cannot manufacture for defence if we don't have energy security and reliable energy. So, and that seems to have disappeared from the conversation a little bit recently, beyond even just keeping the lights on for everybody. If we want to manufacture in the UK for defence, we've got to get the energy sorted as well. So we've got to have that focus there as well, I think. That Russian invasion of Ukraine taught us that we need energy security. The other bit I was going to pick up on was the benefit cuts and the cuts to the civil service as well. So the government was elected on a growth mandate. That's what we saw right through all of their manifesto. All we heard about pre-election was growth. But the actions they're taking seem to be more about balancing the books and meeting their own set fiscal rules. And those can sometimes be opposite to each other, have opposite effects. So if we look at the NI changes in the autumn budget, for example, those changes are causing organisations to reduce their workforce at a point when the government are doing benefit cuts to try and get more people into the workforce and put them supporting to get them into the workforce, and doing civil service cuts, but with cut civil service jobs as well. So those are against each other. You know, businesses bring growth. They do that through providing jobs. They've reacted to the NI cuts by thinking, I won't put those vacancies out, or I might even do some redundancies. And at the same time, more people are landing into the labour market. Doesn't feel like coordinated thought to me.
And does it come at a time when your members are still trying to recruit? Because as we keep hearing, you know, people attracting talent to either stay in Cumbria or come back to Cumbria is a challenge, isn't it? So do you think this is like almost like a triple whammy, because people won't be encouraged to A, recruit, but therefore people won't be encouraged to come back to the county?
Possibly. I think it's one of those things where one of the potential good points from it could be that businesses will be forced into being more productive. So we're hearing a lot of talk about AI, aren't we, for example? You know, how can we use AI to be more productive? And in the end, productivity and growth are so linked, it's unbelievable. I don't think Cumbria in particular is any more affected than anywhere else, but I do think certain sectors, so we have a lot of hospitality, we're really strong on hospitality in Cumbria, obviously. Hospitality and retail are deeply affected by those NI rises and the minimum wage rises. So I think there's a real piece around that. And so I think those were the two bits I wanted to pick up on, but overall, I was left with the same feeling that I've had for the last few months. Where's their North Star as a government? What is it that they're concentrating on? I mean, I thought from their manifesto it was meant to be growth, but now it looks like it's fiscal rules. And the other worry I have is everything seems to be reactive rather than proactive. So we had a change in the forecast from the OBR based on data that we know isn't reliable. I mean, you know, it's best guesstimate. That causes changes like these. And they might not even last a week, because if next week Trump puts tariffs on, everything changes again. So I think there's a piece about creating that stable environment and having a strategy that is a little bit future-proofed. And that's what businesses will be looking for. And it doesn't feel like we've got that right now. So I'd like them to be a bit more radical, in all honesty. Focus on growth, focus on long-term. And I'm still hoping that comes through. But the hope's getting a little bit smaller as time goes on.
Diana, thanks very much. Good insight there. And I'm sure members across Cumbria and further afield listening and probably nodding sagely to what you're saying as well. And it's funny you mentioned about Barra, because there seems to be this habit now, doesn't there, of kind of leaking and or preempting what's going to happen in the world of news. And this is perhaps our next story is a really good example of that. Business Crack has followed closely development of Team Barra. This is a group made up of central government, Westman and Furness Council, BAE Systems. And the overall aim is to highlight the importance of work underway at the shipyard, which of course, many thousands of jobs depend, and further afield in the supply chain as well. We know that £200 million will be spent over the next 10 years in the community, something that really is of national importance.
So we're here today to do something profound. This keel laying does not just mark the birth of this vessel, not even the first of the new dreadnought class. It marks nothing less than the renewal of a historic national endeavour, a collective commitment to our defence for decades to come. After 55 years of our continuous at-sea deterrent, this vessel will take that effort beyond 100 years. So we are all part of that endeavour, a purpose that's much bigger than ourselves. An effort that comprises the whole country, those sailors, their families, all of you, and working people across the United Kingdom, from Barrow to Derby and beyond, in the 42,000 jobs across the supply chain, supported by the largest increase in defence spending since the Cold War.
Yes, yeah, Keir Starmer, the Prime Minister there, speaking in Barrow prior to marking the keel laying ceremony of Dreadnought, the first of a new class of submarine which will carry the UK's nuclear deterrent. Dan Richardson still with us, the Chief Executive of Britain's Energy Coast. I mean, what did you make of the fact that the PM had come to Barrow to make this announcement? I mean, was the timing kind of crucial, do you think? Did it come, obviously, the week before the spring statement? What did you make of it?
So it's amazing news for Barrow, isn't it? And real acknowledgement of what they've contributed over many decades and very quietly, in all honesty, not always acknowledged. So it was good to see that happen from the Prime Minister and him travel up. I think it's a great way, linking on to that, to promote the valuable skills that we have here in the county. You know, we deliver on two national endeavours, defence and decommissioning and nuclear. So it's wonderful to see one of those acknowledged. And I noticed in Cumbria Crack, actually, the cat column saying, you know, about acknowledging the work that's done at Sellafield. And I think that can sometimes be seen as more of a negative than a positive in Westminster, which is a shame. I think the trouble is having those two viewed separately. When you think of those industrial heartlands that we have in Cumbria, around real manufacturing and engineering expertise, they both get government funding. They're both heavily reliant on government funding. And that can sometimes set them apart. Whereas I think there's a huge power for Cumbria. If we can bring those two supply chains together, working collaboratively, we can keep more of that work in Cumbria, make more of a difference for our people in Cumbria, And then we can export all of that as well, which then means we get the inward investment piece, and then we get less dependent on the government budget and all the impact it can have when decisions are made in Westminster that affect our communities.
It's great, first of all, that you mentioned the Cumbria crack cat as well. I often wonder what reaction that that cat attracts, and obviously quite a lot. But I wonder, when it comes to sort of still shouting to be heard, you've been involved in business for many years. Do you still think Cumbria is kind of overlooked when it comes to, despite the Prime Minister coming and the royal status of the Port of Barrow as well? Do you think it's a bit late, maybe?
I think the problem is there's a Cumbrian culture of not getting above ourselves. And I think that means we almost interpret that as don't shout about our successes. Yeah. So I think we need to be shouting our successes much more loudly. It's something we really concentrate on here at Beck BC. And I think when you look at Team Barrow, that kind of infrastructure, that kind of coming together and collaboration, that gives you a place where you can really shout all together collectively. So I think that kind of initiative is so important.
Well, no doubt we'll follow the progress of Team Barrow and, of course, the Energy Coast as well in the future. But Diane, please stay with us for now, because we'll move on to other stories. You've only got to read Business Crack, and I say it's a real joy to carry out this job, because the sheer variety, sheer diversity of businesses that exist all over Cumbria, constantly learning of world-beating work that's underway in parts of Cumbria you wouldn't expect. It's always a nice surprise, from engineering and tourism to agriculture and bespoke trades that you could perhaps be forgiven for thinking had long gone. Well, Redmayne 1860 is one of those tailors based in Alston, where they've been part of the fabric of the town for generations. The latest tailor to look after the name is Tom Mahon, who's just received a top accolade. He's been awarded the title of Master Tailor from the Worshipful Company of Merchant Tailors, established in 1327.
I have the chops to say we're Savile Row trained, we're X, Y and Z. Now, we could be saying that now because we operate from down there as well. We have a shop in Mayfair. But we made a conscious decision for a new range that we're doing. And I'll just show you this label, and it kind of says it all, really. But our label, we ignore all the Mayfair, and we say Redmayne, something in the make since 1860, Wigton, Cumberland. We don't mention anything else because this firm's been here for over 160 years.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, I don't care less about Savile Row.
But that matters, doesn't it, the fact that it is Cumberland, it's not wherever.
And I had a wonderful time working in London, but I will tell you this. When I went there, you can imagine what I was expecting. It was like, I'm going to the Mecca now, this Cumbrian lad, you know, I'm going to be out of my depth, but I'm sure I'll manage. But when I got there, that wasn't true. The reality of it is they were looking at me as if to say, whoa, you were trained in that? You were trained in this? And they kind of like, you know, the light bulb started to come on. It's like, yeah, these guys are brilliant down here, but we're just as good.
Yeah, congratulations to Tom, and I'm afraid that your Business Crack budget doesn't extend to a nice suit for yours truly, but if you listen back to the piece on Business Crack and read the article, of course, as well, you'll also hear from members of the team at Redmayne, including MD Claire Mahon, who told me more about who's buying bespoke suits today.
Alongside those people who are fantastic for us and the reputation of the business, my favourite are the ones who saved for the suits, who've dreamt of this and are so excited, and you get they're a little bit more about their life story, because it's not published in the media or talked about in the papers. Yeah. They're my favourites. Yeah. They're really exciting to meet and share. My favourite at the moment is a gentleman from Silloth who's a bin man, and he's come to Redmayne. He's really excited about coming here, seeing Tom, looking at the cloths, coming for his fittings, wow. You know, going up to some of the people on the wall. I don't know, Willie Whitelaw to... you know, some Oscar winners who you can probably search out on our social media if you want to find them. But... you know, it's I really do love the everyday man who comes to see us. You know, they're interesting, it's special, it's for special occasions.
Yeah, Claire Mahon there from Redmayne 1860. And Diane's still with us. When it comes to sort of hearing that the name and the reputation of a place like Cumberland carries quite a lot of store in places like America, what do you think? Does that make you feel proud and maybe kind of relieved that, you know, something like that still has that kind of kudos today?
It's amazing, isn't it, to think that here in Cumbria we don't have to travel to Savile Row to get that kind of quality. We do it here. And I'd say nor even just as good, as I said in the thing, I'd say we do it better here. So I know Redmayne's are an incredible company and their shopping is a haven of traditional top quality tailoring and fabulous customer service, which I think we heard from Claire there, didn't we? I think there's something about Cumbrian quality, and this comes back to what I was saying just before, we need to talk about it so much more. You look at our food and drink and the artisan producers that we have, you look at hospitality and the Michelin star restaurants that we have, we're second only to London in how many we've got here. You've got the niche products to traditional standards like the suits or the nuclear engineering that we have. We know how to do quality in Cumbria. We shouldn't be so reticent about communicating that as a county.
Yeah, I think you make a really good point. As I said, like I said before, I'm always surprised, you know, that people kind of almost hide it under a bushel, don't they? Not the sense of pride and achievement. And it's only when you try and gently pull it apart and say, look, that's important, isn't it? And they go, oh, yeah, actually, we're one of only three in the world doing this. You know, it's just so great to hear. But also, I think perhaps it's a Cumbrian trait to not boast and not be, you know, kind of boastful in what people are doing, whether it's in work or in personal life or sporting life or whatever. But no, it's good to hear that maybe thanks to people like yourself also trying to say, look, come on, tell your story. And obviously Business Crack as well, that's what we're here for. Then we can perhaps help, you know, spread the word. But I wonder, looking into the future, we obviously talked about the spring statement, the royal statement of Barrow, the royal port of Barrow. We've got Easter around the corner. I mean, the world is... It's obviously changing, but time is getting on. What kind of things are you looking forward to, I wonder? Not just maybe personally, but also for the cluster. What's coming up and what's in your in-tray?
We've got quite an exciting time at the moment because we've got a new director joining the board at our AGM in April. The voting's open at the moment for that. And then in May, we're going to be launching our awards, which obviously you'll know about, which will be in November. So both of those are really exciting for us. I think there is a piece as well about us looking forward to the government getting Sizewell C beyond final investment decision, and us seeing some news coming out from Great British Nuclear and understanding what things look like there. I'm really hoping the government will release a bit of the private investment around nuclear, you know, take away some of the barriers, put in some enablers. That won't cost them money, but we'll get some projects up and running. And I think there's a piece about areas. There's a lot of talk. We're talking a lot in nuclear at the moment about how places have more power around some of these initiatives and some of these projects. And I'd love to see that become a reality.
Do you detect perhaps that there's a sense of optimism, or is it kind of just, you know, waiting to see what happens? I mean, what's your membership? You've got the awards coming up. I guess is that when you take a bit of a litmus test of, you know, what people's attitudes are like and what the mood is like? Or do you already know that people are still kind of poised? I think you were hinting before, are you waiting for things to happen rather than, you know, perhaps having to lobby for something? It's all kind of queued up. It's all, everyone seems to know what's expected. You just need someone to fire the gun and off you go.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. I think we can see how progress could be made and how growth could be delivered, and growth that is really good for our area. We just need the right buttons pressed. So we're hoping somebody's going to do that.
Well, fingers crossed. Let's change the tack completely. Sure. Do you fancy a drink? Because a drink with a difference has been created in Cumbria with a taste that's very much part of the lakes in particular. The Yann at Broadrain near Grasmere has set a lead as a sustainable bistro and a small hotel. There's a hydro system, biofuel heating, and produce is grown and reared on site. Now, in an attempt to find a use for everything, fat from Herdwick sheep is being used to wash whiskey. So how does it work? What does it taste like? Well, sommelier and bar manager Peter King is the man behind Hedonistic Herdwick.
Because we serve so many shepherd's pies and it's such a consistent sort of dish on the menu, we are constantly roasting roughly the same amount of shoulders each week, which is sort of somewhere in the region of sort of 10 Herdwick lamb shoulders. So the easiest way to start the process was to take all the fat from 10 lamb shoulders and put it into a bottle of whiskey and see what happened. Luckily, we seem to hit the nail on the head to start off with. So we just use the saturated sort of fats, go white when they cool, and go solid. And this traps the volatiles from the whiskey and enhances the product. So we did some experimentation using more fat or less fat, and we quickly decided that we'd actually hit the nail on the head from the start in terms of a rough product. We experienced somewhere about 250 grams of this white gold saturated fat per roast, which is sort of plus or minus 10 grams, and it gives us this great sort of richness and sort of quality in the whiskey that we're using.
You've very kindly poured out two samples. A sample A, which we call it, which is the fine blended whiskey on its own. Sample B is the one that's been tweaked and has been enriched. If we just smell the two together, I mean, just take a glass with me. And so the original one, as you say, it's got the volatiles there. It's distinctly pure whiskey, isn't it? The whiskey smell that we know and love. The second one, still got the whiskey smell, but there's something else there, isn't it? How would you describe that?
Yeah, so it's got this almost like meaty richness, slightly more sort of caramel sort of nose, with that underlying like aroma of like Sunday roast lamb, like, which was the idea of what we were aiming for, and luckily by working with the Lakes whiskey, it's come through really nicely, as we've not lost anything from the whiskey in terms of its quality and how it's been distilled. We've just enhanced it with another great Lakeland product.
There you go, Peter King there from the Yann. Diane, I think he called it white gold. What do you think of this idea about washing whiskey with Herdwick fat?
So I'm married to a wine merchant. I don't even know that.
I didn't know.
So I take a keen interest in the drinks market, but I'm going to admit I never have thought of putting lamb fat into whiskey. But what I do know, I think Cumbria, you know, when it comes to sustainability, our strong connection to the land and then our strong connection to engineering makes us the place to do sustainability, doesn't it? However that comes out.
Once again, a good example perhaps of innovation. Who'd have thought? Apparently it's doing very well. I'm told that there is demand for it, and clearly they're very committed to doing it.
That's fabulous to hear.
Diane, thanks very much for your time. I'm really pleased that you joined us on this edition of Northern Lights. I hope you've enjoyed it.
I have very much. Thank you for the invite, Nigel.
Excellent stuff. Well, please keep in touch. And don't forget, if you'd like to be involved in Business Crack or indeed a future edition of Northern Light, get in touch. Let us know. We'll keep the editions coming to you, courtesy of Barnum Media. Thanks for downloading this edition of Northern Lights. Thanks again to Diane Richardson. And don't forget to follow us on LinkedIn. Be sure to share this edition of the podcast. I'm Nigel Thompson. Thanks for listening.